Hey, recruiting enthusiasts, I'm Priyanka and welcome to Tech Recruiting Unfiltered podcast, a podcast for gaining all the insider knowledge about the top recruiters in the tech industry. On this week's episode, we are excited to have Akshay Mathur with us, who's the former global head of talent acquisition technology at S&P Global, a seasoned HR leader with 20 plus years experience in HR tech, talent development or management, people experience, learning operations and talent acquisition. People leader with expertise in mentoring or coaching large teams and stakeholder engagement across geographies, and has an extensive experience in financial services and technology across startups and large organizations. Welcome to the podcast, Akshay. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks, Priyanka. Thanks for having me.
Yeah. How are you doing today, Akshay?
Well, as I rains are all over Gurgaon NCR, so can't complain much as long as you are at home. If you want to venture outside, then it's a little challenging. So far, so good.
Yeah, true. And I'm pleased to have you here and to know more about your journey. So to start off, can you tell us a bit about yourself? And I'm curious to know, like, how your journey began in this industry.
Absolutely. I would love to share that. So I started my journey, or I would say my tentacles have always been in the business. So I actually was in the business, part of a data operations, and I've always been in data businesses throughout my life. So I had my grounding data business, moved into learning, training operations, and started doing recruiting as well on the side. And then eventually grew into a talent leader where I managed not only learning, but regional and global recruiting cohorts. Plus, I'm a great fan, or I would say a geek, when it comes to HR tech. So I've done 15 HR tech implementations on the talent side, be it ATS, be it other talent infrastructure. So that always interests me, apart from recruiting, which is my day job, and I love that. So you know, that's been a very fulfilling journey when I look back, and I would have not, if given a chance, I would not want to change it anymore. Anyhow, I would want to keep it the same the way it has been so far.
Yeah, amazing. And you've had a very interesting journey as well. And so what do you love about what you do that has made you stay in this industry for, I think, over two decades now?
I think, to be honest, Priyanka, I think the opportunity to make an impact, I think that's what always has been very fulfilling for me. And when I say impact, is that as a recruiter, whether it's a recruiter back in the day or as a recruiting leader, the opportunity I have to probably facilitate, you know, a role for somebody who's looking out for the next gig, whether it's a candidate out of a campus or somewhere in the middle of his or her career. So I find it very fulfilling that I can, what all can I do to facilitate that step up for someone. At the same time, on the organization side, it really helps. I love the fact that I'm contributing by bringing the best talent into the organization and contributing to the growth of the firm. So I try to play the role of somewhere in the middle who is equally invested for the candidate's performance and his or her likelihood of getting the best opportunity, as well as for the firm who I represent to get the best talent which is available, so that it's a win-win situation. So I feel that the quest to make an impact, which you actually make it by getting somebody the opportunity, the job and the career, and helping in fulfilling somebody's aspiration, I think it's a great ceiling to be in.
Yeah, I think you've greatly put it. And so Akshay, tell us a bit about your passions or interests outside of work, and how do you like to spend your free time?
All right. So I'm not a big reader. So it's not that I gobble a lot of books and read it. I'm a person who prefers to do bite-sized reading. And that's what I've done most of it. Lately, I've caught up with a lot of these podcasts. So following business leaders, thought leaders, following them up and helping know more about what's really happening around. I know it's not like a hobby, but it interests me. Just to keep my abreast with what's really happening, not only in the field of HR or recruiting, but in larger ecosystem. I follow the capital markets big time, the economy, the world economy, and I have a opinion about things. I think that's one. Secondly, I geek on space exploration. I follow very closely, extensively, the likes of Elon Musk and his venture at SpaceX, or the Blue Origin, who has Jeff Bezos as a promoter, as well as to some extent the Virgin Atlantic gig around space. But reading about space exploration and what these guys are doing and what they're trying to do also really interests me a lot. Other than that, of course, I, like anybody else, I love to go on a drive. Fortunately, Delhi NCR has one of the best roads. And in the last few years, I would say if you want to crisscross from different cities, the road infrastructures has gone better by almost like 100%. Mm-hmm. So driving is a lot more enjoyable. And that's what I do a lot as well. And apart from spending time with my daughter, who has just now left the nest and has gone for her graduation.
Nice. But whenever
she comes once in a while, so spending time with her and trying to help her out as she segues her education journey. So these are a few things. And of course, I do catch up with my friends. I don't have too many, but very selected few ones, which I've cultivated over the last, since my childhood till date, and spending time with them and making best use of the time you have in hand.
Yeah, really nice. And so I think previously you were like heading the global talent acquisition technology at S&P Global, and you've been there for over 2 decades. That's pretty amazing. And so before we get into, you know, your learnings and contributions and journey in the DA industry, I'm very keen to know what motivated you to stay with your S&P family for over 2 decades.
No, that's an interesting question, and many people ask and wonder. I would say, no, as long as you're getting the growth and the interest to be in the ecosystem, I think why to really look for a change? That's number one. Number two, I feel that every couple of years, S&P went through a transformation, so that brought more newness in the way of work, added more positivity into the culture. You got to work with different peoples across the length and breadth of the organization. A lot of acquisition and diversification resulted in a lot new people coming in and joining. You could work with them and learn from them. So I think I never felt that I was in the same system for 20 years. Plus, just to add that I came as part of one of the acquisitions. Like you, so I was part of the startup organization, which was eventually bought by S&P. So technically, you see, it's a 20-year tenure, but part of it was also in that startup firm. But honestly, I think if I need to sum it up again, it's learning, opportunity to be yourself, able to bring some change through innovation and excellence, and a spot which keeps you happy. And I think I got all the ingredients. So a very satisfying journey, I would say, the last 20 years or so when I was with S&P.
Yeah, awesome. And so to begin with, I want to understand a bit about how you assess tech talent. So recruiters are always expected to anticipate the industry trends and stay on top of it as well, and keep up to date with the market for securing the best talent out there. So I understand that talent sourcing is tough, especially for the hard to fill in roles. And I want to know, like, how you go about it, and how does this sourcing strategy vary for, say, entry level to executive level positions? And what methods have you found successful that you want people to definitely try out?
Well, I would say, Priyanka, that sourcing is not a rocket science. I think what's important is that you need to be prescriptive and proactive and predictive to ensure that you're getting the right time, right talent at the right time. I think that's very important. And there are these few fundamentals as aspects of sourcing. Of course, nowadays it's become a big tech play as well. You use a lot of technology tools, and I'm happy that we have this because it makes life a lot more easier. But what's important, as I said, right? You need to do your work with your business line to really understand what's the need of the talent, let's say, for in the next quarter or next 6 months or whatsoever, so that you can start working today. I think that's very important, and that's where I think a lot of us get caught up with, because when we really don't know what's the kind of a talent demand coming from the business, right? Of course, there can be situations like the ones which happened in COVID, where suddenly you were, you know, you faced that wall where everyone was recruiting for same kind of talent, and it became not Herculean to source the right kind of person. But having said that, I think that's important. You need to be predictive. Secondly, I think what's important is that we all of us always cry about lack of talent pools. But one question I keep asking myself, my team, and my business associates as well: what work have we done to really cultivate the talent? Right? We keep talking about harvesting the talent, but I think we need to make an effort to cultivate it. Right? Cultivation of talent. I think there are multifold strategies for that. When you're talking about early careers talent at the campus level, you need to be invested with the academia, with the student community, in different forums. And they are like, well, these days, academies are also very happy to be partnering with you to really bring the best in their student community. So I think that investment, visibility, probably making some kind of a influence on the curricula, which is more attuned to the kind of work you need to do. Providing mentoring opportunities to those early career students in the campuses, so with your leadership, right, to help them out, to navigate what is expected out of them. I think these are a few things, and the list goes long in terms of when it comes to early career talent harvesting. Same, actually, when we talk about, let's say, people in the middle career levels, I think what's important is the level of engagement, because all organizations are not fortunate enough to have the luxury of keeping a bench, right? You always go to the market on just in time. So then you need to ensure that your visibility is there, your employer branding is top notch, that people know who you are. So that networking, relationship building, I think, is a continuous basis. And recruiters, not only recruiters, but the business also have to be equally invested in developing those relationships, so that when the time comes, you are able to get into the talent pool and consider people who you would want to work for you at that point in time. So I think it's a journey, and it's on a continuous basis. Nothing just in time works. It is a long haul process, and I would say it is becoming a lot more challenging, I think, because with the scarce talent pool, right, and all, every organization is trying to target the same kind of talent pool, it's becoming so chaotic and so difficult because there's a supply constraint, that you need to be high on the visibility of the candidate all the time. So I think that's where the magic needs to happen to ensure your sourcing works well.
Yeah, absolutely true. And so, okay, so let's say you are hiring for a tech role. What are the key parameters you always have in mind, and how do you judge if he or she is the right fit for the role and the organization in terms of both hard and the soft skills?
I think I would say measuring or evaluating somebody on hard skills is a lot more easier, because you have tools, your assessment centers, you're assessing other tools, which can or simple as whiteboard exercises, which can really figure out, help you to find out the technical competency of the individual. I think what's more important and which is most sensitive to measure is the softer side of SIN, right? The cultural compatibility, or the learning agility of the individual, because you may hire somebody for skill X, but tomorrow you may need to upskill the person. So to segue the person or pivot the person to something else. So I think the learning agility, the growth mindset, and the other softer skills are a lot more harder to measure. And I think so far we still rely a lot more on the feeling of the gut, right? Which is, I would say, somewhere 50-50. We need to also have a more data-driven approach to validate our gut feeling. Now, I would say every organization have tried to find out the best way of doing it. One way I have understood is that you have those culture audits being conducted timely through pulse surveys, employee surveys, and you end up creating some kind of a culture index. And then you, as a recruiter, you get the opportunity to benchmark an incumbent candidate with the different aspects of the culture index, and see how well the person would be probably a good fit, right? like the engagement level. And as I said, I spoke about learning, agility, and growth mindset. I think that's where it is. But there's a lot to be done in terms of measuring the softer side of it. The hard part, I think, is still easy. And you know, products like which VCP also has makes it easier. But I'm still looking for the North Star when it comes to helping in measuring the softer side. There are a lot of products in the market that do that, but I'm not too sure if they are able to do what they intend to.
Right. And when it comes to, like you said, measuring the and evaluating the soft skills, so far, like from your experience, what kind of assessments have worked well for you?
So I would say one assessment which I was involved in implementing and then using it as a consumer is a product called Pymetrics. You know, I really love it. It's an AI audited technology. It's based on the concept of gamification, and a lot of work has gone into it because they have an army of IO psychologists who have created a persona-based recruiting for certain talent profiles. So I think that's one of the closest, I would say, who has very helped or influenced me as a consumer in terms of using a product like Pymetrics, because it allows you to really benchmark with your top talent who are already working for you, and then you try to use that benchmark to find similar kind of talent in the extent pool, right? And the benchmark is based on technical competencies as well as the softer side of things. And I think it's been in S&P, we use it for a couple of years, and I'm sure they're using it today as well. And the kind of quality of hire we got was pretty nicer than we had probably in the past. So I would say products like these continue to really interest me. And so I would say it's a concept of a play of tech versus human psychology or human sciences. Anybody who's getting it right, I think it has a great opportunity to really crack the market. And there are quite many, because there's so many products in the market, right? In the Indian context as well as in the international context that you work, it's very difficult to keep a track on them. But Pymetrics come right to the top because I've used it personally myself.
Right. That's really helpful for the listeners to actually know that what kind of like assessments and tools have worked really well for you. And so I'd also like to know like how you approach candidate assessment beyond technical skills. What techniques have you found effective when it comes to evaluating a candidate's problem-solving abilities or critical thinking and creativity?
I think, Priyanka, again, to test these competencies, it's again have always been a combination of assessment tools. That's number one, because it just helps you to democratize the process. That's number one. Sorry. Number two, I think, talking about the solution, I would say how we actually got there, I think we had to really invest in creating some kind of standardization, the way hiring teams are conducting the hiring process, right? I think that's where the opportunities are. So having interview trainings for the hiring teams, which are behavioral interview trainings, right? Which and doing those trainings every couple of months to keep the rigor around how and what you are assessing, whether it is Priyanka assessing a candidate for a same role or somebody else in Priyanka's team. I think that's, we need to bring as much as consistency in the approach where possible. I think that's, so I would say there was a lot of focus on doing that by providing the softer tools to learning and change management in the hiring teams to ensure that we are able to assess the talent. But I would say the best approach in assessing talent holistically has been the whiteboard exercises, where a problem statement has been shared by the interviewer, and then they're having a marathon conversation, which is lasting for like 1.5 to 2 hours. And it is with the focus is on, solving the issue, probably whether you are able to get to a solution or not, but the approach towards it, right? I think where we always focus is on the approach rather than the end, because if the approach is right, you'll definitely get to the end. But I think, I think that's very important. So I think most, for most, especially for tech talent, I think we are focused on the problem solving activity through whiteboarding exercises.
True. Very true. And so
one thing I also want to add also that, especially, and this is very cultural to India, when you're using technical assessments, especially if it, using it for early career hires, it works very well. They are very happy to do it. And they do it timely as well. But as you move beyond the early career talent and to the, I would say, the people in the 5 to 8 years experience bracket, at least in India, it's a cultural complexity to actually make them write an assessment, right?
Yeah.
People feel very defensive about it. You need to do a chasing game all the time. And that's where your effectiveness, and I would say efficiency of using assessment drops, not because the assessment themselves are not fulfilling the benchmark of what you would want to test somebody, but it is the inability for us to make people write the test because of the cultural thing. And that's very much in India.
Yeah.
I think if you go to Western markets, irrespective whether you are a person with a 1 year experience or a 10 years experience, and if you expect a person to write an assessment, people are very happy to do that. But I think that's in, but in India, I think that has been always been the challenge. And we have always been trying different ways and means to crack that code in terms of how less the delinquency can be and more people can actually attend the test. So, and that has been challenged, especially in when it comes to tech recruiting.
Yeah. So have you been able to crack the code of getting senior to lateral hires to take the test?
Yeah. So I would say the best way for engaging with them is through whiteboard exercises. I think they prefer that a lot more than probably boxing it in a time-bound manner, like assessment where they want to need to do NCQC or whatever, or write a code. These people, they prefer a lot more of the, more like a conversation style of evaluation where there is a whiteboard as part of it.
Yeah. And so how do you strike a balance between seeking for specialized skills and fostering a culture of continuous learning and adaptability?
Yeah, I know that's a great question, Priyanka, and especially in this environment where your need for different kind of skills keeps changing at the drop of a hat, it's very difficult to gain the market, right? In terms of that you always have people the kind of talent you need and they're available, right? So I think what's more important, and I think that's what I've always focused on, not now, but always in my career, is looking for that learning agility and a growth mindset, the attitude and aptitude for the person. I think that's important. Of course, for certain technical skills, certain fundamental requirements are there, because unless you know those fundamental skills, you cannot help the person to top it up with the further skills. So that I get it. But I think what's more important is the person's openness to learn. Right. So I think that we always look for people who are more open to learn. That's number one. Number two, as an organization, I think we always need to focus on investing in our people to upskill themselves. I know a lot of organizations, it's a different maturity for different organization and what the thought process are, right? A very progressive organization, they understand that they need to go double down on training and development. In spite of the fact they know that a good chunk of the people may leave eventually, right? But I think you cannot, but I think the thought process should be that that's a given, that some people will leave, right? But that doesn't mean you stop investing in learning development. So I think that those organizations are doing well, and we know those organizations, how they are, right? They are themselves called universities because they learn and teach people, and then eventually their talent gets widespread across the industry. So I think investment is on that aspect is very important. Secondly, I think I'm a great proponent, and I know organizations invest a lot on internal mobility. Now, you may have a lot of your talent internally available. They may not be readily there for the kind of a job. But I think that's where we need to continue to train, coach our hiring managers. That's okay. That if you can't hire a blue unicorn, because the blue unicorn else is
different,
right? Have somebody who's been in the system, you know him or her well, invest a little bit more and help the person to upskill and get retrained, and that they become your top performer. I think that's another way to look at it. Thirdly, I would say I really believe in the concept of the anchor hires. And And when I say anchor hires, I mean probably hiring the top talent in that skill set from the industry, right? If you're talking about the experienced hires, and probably going a little bit beyond your budget, that's okay. But that anchor hires becomes a magnet to attract other talent, and not only for attraction, but retention also. And then this anchor hire can become a great mentor and a coach to really help other people who are still not there in that skill, help them to upskill, right? Because they'll have somebody as a manager or as a hiring leader for the group to showcase them a path of learning, and somebody who they can look up to, right? So I think I really believe in that anchor hires who can actually become the talent attractor and someone who can retain the talent.
Yeah, really great. And so like you said, I think actually you have extensive experience in hiring for early careers, lateral and senior leadership. So to start with early careers hiring, how do you go about building relationships with universities and other educational institutions to source the earlier career talent?
Absolutely, Priyanka. I think something what I said in the beginning of my conversation as well, right? It is a relationship business. And recruiting per se, whether you're talking about early careers or any kind of level of hiring, it is a very relationship-based function, right? So I think what's really important is that that we need to have that ongoing interaction, conversation with the academia on an ongoing basis. It can't be that you appear only in the time of recruiting and then you again fade away once the recruiting season is off, right? And I think so that mindset doesn't work. And I understand that majority of the organizations now work on the premise that they have to engage with the academia, on a regular basis, right? So I think, as I said, be upon the top of the mind of the candidate, of the student, right? And you can do it through multiple ways, right? Events, conducting hackathons, or your skill-based workshops, your mentoring opportunities, having your talent communities where you are allowing those students to contribute to a problem statement which you may have, create those kind of, I would say, opportunity for them to showcase their skills on a problem statement which may be real life, and those thought series, meetups. So I think these are like very prescriptive activities which you need to do, but you need to do with consistency, and you need to have your heart at the right place to do it. It cannot be a half-way activity, then it doesn't really work, because those student communities are being wooed by not only one hiring team or a company, but hundreds of them, right? So I think it's important that you do it diligently and on a continued basis. And of course, if you have the opportunity and the resources to influence the academic curriculum, why not? That way you can attune it to the kind of requirement you may have. So I think that helps. Something I also did as part way back is sponsorship opportunities. You probably do sponsorship of their academy tuition fees, right? It's another way of looking at it, right? Funding the education in some way or the other. I think it goes a long way in creating not only making an impact, but also creating a positive talent branding. I think something which would always remain in the minds of the individual throughout the life. That's, I would say, early careers. And I would say this doesn't but changes when it comes to mid-level career as well, or the senior level hires, but the kind of engagement differs. The need to be visible is always there, but your tools will be different, right? I think, for example, if I talk about, say, senior level hires, it is a little bit more, I would say, white glove service. You need to be engaging with them a lot more. You need to have your exec recruiters who know how to really collaborate with this kind of senior talent. Even though you may not have a talent need today, but it may come 6 months or next year, or you never know, it may not come in the next couple of years, but that doesn't mean that you should not have the relationships going. I think networking on these industry forums, conferences, I think that's another way to have your name and face out in the market, so that you're able to sell yourself when the need be. Because if you're just going on time, then you're trying to do oversell, and oversell doesn't work, right? It has to be very subtle. subtle way of engaging with this talent pool. So I think that's the important way. And I think we all need to create a very persona based branding approach, right? Because what works for a career talent in terms of the communication channel, the content of the communication is very different from what you're going to communicate and through what medium to a senior level talent or to a mid-level talent, right? Probably a Twitter, let's say, for example, may work for an early career talent much more, but for a senior level talent, probably a LinkedIn may be a better way of doing it, or an in-person meeting. I know, and last thing before I actually pause is that COVID has actually taught us to network, but it has taken away the attraction of networking in person. Those coffee chats, those meetups in person, I really miss it personally as well. I hope it catches up again, because I think nothing can replace a one-to-one or an in-person conversation to network and build a relationship than those remote conversations. But you need to live as the way the environment dictates. But I think that's a piece I think we should get better with, it because there's nothing that can be replaced by an in-person conversation.
Yeah, very true. And so how does this like strategy vary for the early career hiring? How does it vary globally? And any challenges you have faced in certain regions?
I would say early career, the way of approaching the talent or engaging with the talent is not much different. I would say the same prescription works, right? So I would say the challenge is not on how you connect with them or the tools you use. I think, and the generation is, these are like all digital natives, right? So in terms of the process also, not much there's a difference. Of course, there are certain regional nuances, and something very interesting I got to know. For example, I was involved in doing talent outreach for our Mexico operation, which is new for us. Now, I got to understand that in Mexico, for example, LinkedIn is not the preferred way of people reaching out to each other.
Oh, okay.
Right? So these small nuances or levels are different. But otherwise, I think early careers is the same. And I would say, you talk about any kind of career, whether the experience hires or mid hires, the approach is the same. There's no difference. Mm-hmm. You need to understand only what are the few things which differ culturally, right?
Yeah.
For example, in Eastern Europe, people prefer to work in a contractual setup. In the sense, they don't want to work as a full FTE, because as a contractor, your tax laws are more favorable, right? So people prefer the relationship of a contractor rather than an FTE, unlike probably in India. So I think these are small nuances which are regulatorily compliance related and some culturally, which you need to take in mind. But overarching, I think the same principles operates.
Okay, right. And so coming to senior leadership hiring, I would like to know your approach to identifying and attracting the high potential senior leadership talent. And what are few mistakes you've seen organizations make when hiring for senior leadership roles?
I think a couple of things which I think senior level talent always looks for, right, is that the ability to innovate, the ability to run the show quite independently, right, and the ability to do opportunity to do a build out, right? What I can build and grow. I think for senior level talent, they're always excited to do something which can create a difference, where they feel they're able to make a mark, right? And I think as an organization, we need to really leverage on this need of the senior level talent and accentuate that, so that you are able to create a very attractive value proposition when you're trying to engage with this kind of talent. And whether it is a tech talent or non-tech talent, it doesn't matter, I think. But these levers are important for, especially for senior level hires. That's I would say it's a given. Secondly, when you say about the the mistakes people make in senior level hires is that you need to differentiate your way of recruiting for a volume hiring is different approach than to a senior level hires. I'm not saying that one single recruiter cannot do the same job, but I think either you make them learn the intricacy of how the recruiting works for these two different subsets, or you separate the team and have exec level recruiters who are doing executive recruiting. Because as I said, it's a little white glove service. You need it's a little slower process. It is a lot more, I would say, high on account management kind of or a client services or client relationship management kind of a role, where you need to play it out with a lot of high emotional intelligence. And you need to do like a sell. I think today recruiting is all about sell. I'm not saying that you don't need to do the sell to the entry level talent, but I think what's important is the way you approach, right? So I think the approach to sell the idea, the ideation, I think that's important. They're also looking for high level of engagement with equally people with a senior talent in the organization with whom you can make them engage with, right? Have a conversation so that they can get to understand what's the kind of a talent already the organization hosts, because that would be a great attractor to them to work in an ecosystem which has a like-minded people, right?
Yeah.
I think that's important. And I say there's a degree of calmness with which you need to operate. I think that's important. Yeah. It's you have to go to it's when you're going to shop, we need to learn the intricacy which the luxury brands follow, right? When you're doing executive hiring, right? I think that you need that kind of a sensitivity and way of operating to not attract them and engage with them.
Right. And so how do you balance internal promotion versus external recruitment when it comes to these leadership positions?
I think, Priyanka, these talent dynamics really focus. The business strategy dictates it, right? I think that's very important.
Okay.
But as a talent leader, I think it's very important for us to continue to engage and advise our hiring our business teams to focus a lot on external versus internal talent equally. I think it's very important.
Yeah.
The easiest for a hiring manager is always to say that go and let's look outside. I think because they find it the most. But I think the approach should always be the first look inside. Unless you're looking for a skill which you don't have in the organization, and you're trying to build that skill stack in the organization, then you know that there's nothing and you need to seek somebody from outside. But that's not the case. I think always one should look internally. Even though there may be opportunities where you would need to add a little bit more upskill aspect to the leader, they may not be there 100%, but that's okay. I think we need to be more about investing in it and then ensuring that they come on the track of what you're expecting as a from a skill set. But I think internal talent should be given preference, I would say. And I think what I have done and I've really engaged with is that keeping a pulse on your internal talent as a leader, you should know your recruiter should also know who's who. At times, do a tap on the shoulder. I've been an umpteen times of tapping on the shoulder and encouraging somebody to apply for a role because I feel this person would be really apt for the role. And then selling the candidacy of that person to the hiring manager as well. And then trying to do the matchmaking. So I think that's very important. And organizations who continue to focus on developing their internal talent through skill upgradation, focusing a lot on learning and development, I think their mobility numbers are much more higher and their retention rates are much more higher. They have a less attrition. Yeah. Engagement level of employees are high and you'll find long-tenured employees. And those organizations are doing well on their, when you look at the balance sheet as well. So I think it has to be fine balance, but try to focus more on internal talent before blindly going for an external talent.
Yeah, absolutely true. And so I think when it comes to hiring for senior tech roles, what are some key attributes you look for in the senior talent that may differ from the entry level or the mid-career roles?
I think I think cultural aspect, everything is given. I think whether you're looking for a top senior level hires or looking for an entry level hire, it's the same. There's no difference. I think what's more important is for senior level talent, the thought leadership, the person bringing. And that's very important because then the as I said, the ability to innovate. The ability to lead change. I think you would need to see the attributes of what they've done in the past, where they have made probably decisive change or transformation in their previous roles. I think that becomes very important, yeah. Right? I would say the human aspect, I think that's a given. You need to be empathetic. You need to be a leader who believes in the philosophy of servant leadership and situation leadership, right? Somebody who's very high on DEI, I think, because if you have people who are passionate about diversity and inclusion, and their action speaks about their intent on diversity, right? I think that's a very important attribute for a leader when we're looking for a senior level hires. And I think, that's where it is. Apart from, of course, the givens of the technical competencies, all that, I think it is important. I would say purpose alignment, value alignment, these days every hire is looking for. Whether it's a senior level hire or junior level hire or mid-level hire, I think that's, so these attributes are given. I think, but I would say these are a few things which a senior level talent would need to bring in, or we would need to look for when hiring for such senior roles.
Yeah, right. And so how do you make your company look attractive to senior level talent in such a competitive tech market?
See, again, I think what's important and something I think many organizations have already realized that you need to have a persona-based talent branding strategy, right? One size doesn't fit all. So I think that that everyone has largely understood. And as I said, opportunity to innovate, opportunity to operate where they can bring their thought leadership, they get the required legroom to run the show, something there where they get to build out from the ground up. I think that's something which really attracts the senior level talent. And as a recruiting team, one needs to ensure that you are able to project and market that these aspects very openly and clearly to get their attention. But also more importantly, I think like any other higher senior level talent is also very keen on what's the vision of the organization, the purpose with which they're operating. A lot of senior level talent these days are also focusing on the environmental social governance aspects of the firm. Right, that how sensitive they are to, or I would say not only sensitive, but how serious the firm is about the ESG footprint, you know, and what they intend to do in the next couple of years and make a difference in the sustainability phase. I think that becomes very important. Plus, of course, everybody would want to work for a firm which is profitable, has a great runway for many, many years, and is a stable organization, which is something any candidate would look for. And there is no difference when it comes to senior level talent.
Right, true. And so what are a few major hurdles you have faced during the entire tech hiring process over the years, and what approaches helped you tackle them?
See, the one which comes at the top of my mind is during COVID, right? Where with every organization moving into the digitization transformation that the tech talent became so scarce. And tech talent across the spectrum of experience, right? Whether you're talking about, I would say early career talent to mid or senior, of course, I think was very challenging. And something which I think I have tried to do and work successfully for us is one, is that working on the concept of what I called the proactive talent pipelining, right?
Okay.
So something I was alluding to it in the beginning of the conversation as well, where you are a little predictive in your approach in terms of what are your talent gaps in the upcoming period based on your historical attrition or your need for certain talent roles. And you continue to source those talent a little bit early in the day rather than starting looking for talent when the need arises. I think so that proactive talent pipelining, I think has to churn people all the time because so that you are not caught napping only when the market need is. Secondly, we have worked continuously with our learning partners to ensure that our upskilling and reskilling initiatives are on a hyperdrive to ensure we are creating that pull off for people to upskill on certain skill sets and segueing them to career lattices or career paths, which are, of course, something they are seeking, but also that aligns with the need of the talent for the organization at any given point in time. And that becomes your source for talent through internal mobility. So I think I would say that is there. Thirdly, continue to have certain, I would say, relationships with your external vendor partners. I think that their relationship is also very important, especially when you are looking for certain scarce talent. Because certain, I would say, nooks and corners of the talent market which you cannot reach, you need to rely on your vendor partners to do that for you. Right?
Yeah.
And you need to find a very fine balance between the two. But I think they can become your eye and ear and your additional helping hand to find and source talent for you. So I think that becomes another tool in your arsenal to employ in such a talent scarce market. Thirdly, as I said, continue to up your ante in terms of drumming your beats around your employer branding through your talent marketing channel. Use the power of your employees to do branding on behalf of the organization. I really feel that what a marketing or branding team or sales team or the recruiting team can do, it still will fall short. So you need to use the power of your employees to be the brand ambassador and then use their network to accentuate your branding message. So I think, I've always utilized it and I've always really pushed the bit in to make that happen. And people like to do that. I've seen that employees are very gung-ho about being the brand ambassador and play the triumph of the organization they operate. So use them very well and give them all the tools to do that. So something which we develop, for example, a hiring manager toolkit or a brand or a recruiter toolkit or an employee toolkit where they can actually use collaterals from those toolkits as part of the branding message when they are doing their bit on, let's say, on LinkedIn or a Facebook or whatever the medium would be, but use their power. I think because their reach would take you to the places where probably you cannot reach. So I think that's one which I'm really, very excited about to use it all the time.
Right. Yeah. Really great. And so it's very important to stay up to date with all the trends and the market as well. So how do you stay updated on the latest sourcing as well as the entire recruitment techniques?
I think in today's time, it has become, I would say, a lot more easy to keep yourself updated about what's really happening. I think through these, whether you're using channels like LinkedIn, now you have ChatGPT, you have the opportunity to read so much about what's the thought leaders have to say or get to know about what other organizations are doing it as best practices. And so I think there's no replacement of, you know, doing those readings, following the web, and trying to know who is doing what. I think that's one. Yeah. Secondly, of course, these networking opportunities, these industry forums, now a lot of them are happening now offline as well. So whether it is offline or in online, networking forums are also important way to really know what's happening and who's doing what. Secondly, also I feel that these opportunity to know and learn and implement should not be just left to the leaders in the beginning, in the team. It should be encouraged to be done by each and every recruiter also. I think that's important. Yeah. And something I've always been a big proponent of, encouraging our recruiters to do their bit of learning and upskilling themselves. And thirdly, I would say, do some dollar spend in getting yourself and your team trained on certain new technology or new skill set in the world of recruiting or otherwise. I think that's important. For example, I know there's a lot of courses now out in the market of using, let's say, generative AI tools like ChatGPT in recruiting. I would want that every recruiter should learn that.
Yeah.
Organization should be ready to pay for the fees and everyone should be open to learn. So I think these are the ways of keeping yourself updated and upskilled. I think that's important. And there's no replacement of, you know, taking some time out to read, write and observe.
Yeah.
And to know more what's happening around you.
Yep, greatly put. And so you are involved in developing the global TA strategy for S&P. So what were like some of the key factors you always considered and when developing a TA strategy and the crucial areas you think are often overlooked by companies?
I think the most important TA strategy, as I said, it is not never ever in isolation from the business strategy. So the business strategy always dictates your talent strategy or your recruiting strategy. So that's a given. So I think what's really important and always have been my prescription to follow is that be very closely involved with your business leaders and with your people partners to understand what's the real need, right? I think that's important to understand. Then the question which we need to ask and get an answer to it is build versus buy versus borrow, or I think that's important. So you need to get this right. It's not that you need to always follow one. It has to be a combination of all the three approaches when it comes to, you know, from a talent recruiting strategy. Thirdly, if you're talking about a greenfield project, then it needs a different lens. You need to put it to understand if it requires a ground up build out, right? Mm. Because if you're going into a new market, then I think what's important is to understand the regulatory compliance aspects of that, of the local market. And for there, I really rely on vendor relationships, right? Because those vendors who are working in the market, they know the market very well. They can become your intelligence to understand the market, especially in the initial period. So I think use vendor relationships to get your intelligence right. And then of course, have one or two of your recruiting organization staff members been hired locally, because they can be your intel to dictate the strategy of recruiting, right? I think these are the few fundamental things which are important when developing a TA strategy, and then all these inputs can dictate what kind of sourcing strategy you would need to have, what candidate demographics you need to figure it out, what would be your comp and ben strategy to attract talent, your game plan in terms of when it comes to the branding, talent branding piece of it, right? Because your messaging has to also touch the mind space of the individual on the ground which could be a different individual because of culture, from a cultural aspect. So I think all these data points would dictate your TA strategy, which of course, as I said, counts on your, how you're going to source, what you're going to source, and how, and what you're going to do to attract that talent. I think so that can come up, but these are the fundamental things which will help you to develop a sound strategy. And that's where many of the organization at times they falter because they jump the gun and they try to really, they end up not doing this, I would say, ground up exercise, and they just land up in the market to hire talent, and they face difficulties to attract talent because they don't understand how the local dynamics work.
Yep.
And then you end up changing your game plan, but that results in wasting a lot of time. So probably invest time beforehand. And then you have a lot of tools. I have used one such tool, which I really swear by. It is called Talent Neuron. Earlier it was with Gartner. I believe Gartner has sold it. It helps you to give demographic talent market insights of any region in the world. And this do a lot of data scraping from public sources, government sources, and so on and so forth. So that can become one of your, I would say, data points or data sets when taking a decision on what a talent strategy should look like.
Rightly said. And so how can companies like ensure that their talent attraction strategy is appealing to different generations of talent, from boomers to Gen Z?
I think one is important to have a very data-driven approach to find out what attracts to whom, right? Now, for example, the organization to understand, like, say, example, for a Gen Z, you need to have a higher pitch when it comes to, let's say, hybrid work arrangement versus a baby boomer who is more interested to know how your health plan works. So I think, first of all, identifying that there are different talent groups and who are multi-generational, and what would attract to them versus what would attract to some other. I think you need to get that right. As long as you have that understanding, then you can able to create a persona-based branding strategy to reach out to them. Because, see, at the end of the day, the employee value propositions talk track is the same. What would interest you, of course, to you and me, what will interest how the compensation works, how the hybrid work environment of the work environment works, what are the health benefits, how the learning development works, how the growth prospects are there, blah, blah, blah. But for you, the hybrid workspace arrangement is more important than for me, which is a, let's say, a health plan, right? So I think we need to toggle between these different levers. And that's where I think a detailed data and analytics approach can help you to really maneuver your messaging plan and then approach the pool accordingly. Rather than going with a one standard communication plan, which will not appeal to everyone and may end up being very dud.
Yeah, true. And so as important it is to develop a very solid TA strategy, I think it's equally crucial to measure the effectiveness of your TA efforts and see what's working and what's not and constantly make improvements. So I would like to know, like, your approach to measuring, how you approach to measuring your TA efforts, and what metrics or indicators do you find most valuable?
See, again, measuring of the recruiting team's effectiveness is a combination of qualitative and quantitative benchmarks, right? On the qualitative ones, those are typical metrics, right, which everyone uses today, from as simple as time to fill to time to hire to the conversion ratios and so on and so forth. I think these are like fundamental metrics, and they do good, right? But what is important, and where many of the recruiting teams or recruiters they miss the point, is contextualizing it. I think because if you are, whenever you're trying to present data, unless you contextualize the data through a rightful storyboarding, it will not make sense. So I think that what's important is that set it in stone, but help the people who are trying to consume it what really entails, because 1-on-1 can be 2 and 1-on-1 can also be 11. So you need to bring that aspects very clear in front of the consumer or the client. I think that's important. Secondly, I would say the other measurement which I really believe in is the survey feedback. The surveys which are conducted on candidate, on hiring managers, I think they provide you a great deal of inputs in terms of their experience, because I really believe on the fact that people never forget how they were made to feel.
Yeah.
Right. True. So I think a lot of inputs you can get through these surveys as well. That becomes a very important, I would say, data set for me when I'm measuring effectiveness of our recruiting teams. And thirdly, I would say your recruiters or the TA leadership need to have a very strong relation going on with the business, so that your conversations which are happening, whether they are happening bi-weekly, monthly, whatever the cadence may be, I think the conversation should revolve on problem solving, right? On ideation, right? And not on just pushing the numbers and saying this is what it is, and letting people imagine on their own what does it really entail. So I think have a meaningful contextualized conversation, something which is future centric, feed forward, which is solution oriented conversation, where you are providing advice. You're not working on the premise of just doing a transaction from point A to point B, because that's because business is seeking your support in the advice, not on what they're asking you to do and you do it. That they can then probably make anybody do that. What they expect from you is ideation, conversation, thoughtfulness, and then solution-oriented mindset. I think that's, as long as you keep that, the input or the feedback will come on its own, and you'll be able to fix the gaps, because there will always be opportunities and room for improvement. So I think as long as you have a continuous improvement kind of a mindset, right? I think that's important. Yeah. You are following a data-driven approach in figuring out gaps, and consider your client, whether in this case the candidate or your hiring teams, as paramount, and keeping them at the center of it about whatever you're doing. I think then you'll be able to fulfill the expectation and really partner with them well.
True. Very true. And the importance of quality of hire, it cannot be overstated, and it impacts various aspects of an organization's success as well. So how do you measure the quality of your hires?
Yeah. See, quality of hire is it's a little bit tricky as a measurement, but I try to keep it very simple. For me, a quality of hire is dictated by how the person is actually performing once the person is on the organization, right? Now, we need to first, it's important that first 3 to 6 months, you need to negate what the person is contributing. Whereas a typical hire, whether it's an entry-level hire or a senior-level hire, 3 to 6 months is the time when the person takes to absorb and be part of the system, right? So I think performance or contribution in the 6 to 12 months period, right, is a good indicator of how what's the kind of quality of talent you are able to hire. I think that's important. Yeah. And then continue to measure it on an ongoing basis. That's number one. Number two, I think also what's important is that your retention rate, right? Your attrition numbers within, let's say, people in the first year of tenure or second year of tenure and blah, blah, blah. I think that's also a great data point to measure the quality of hire. Thirdly, I think also it's important is that once the person is in the system, how the person is navigating into different job roles, opportunities, the internal mobility rate is also, I would not say in totality, but it somewhere it gives you a sense of the kind of hire you did, right? Because if somebody is able to segue into a different job and do a role within a couple of years, it again is a reflection of the kind of person you hired in the beginning. So I would say these are a few things which are early inputs to give you a sense of how that the quality of talent you seek and you absorbed in the system.
Right. And so I don't think there is anything more frustrating in recruitment than candidates dropping off after an offer has been made. In most cases, I think the recruiters go through the arduous process of sourcing the relevant talent, and then they spend hours to improve the candidate experience, only to be left empty-handed. So understandably, like, there are some things that even the best recruiters can't control, but I think certainly we can take steps to reduce the drop-offs. So Akshay, like, from your experience, what are a few effective methods to increase the offer-to-join ratio, and any tips or examples you want to share with us?
Surely. First, I wanted to share that, and I'm sure a lot of your audience would also know and must have experienced it. The offer drop, earlier it was more of an India phenomena, right? We saw offer drops happening across the geography at the height of COVID. So I think that was interesting, including the US market. Now, you rightly said it's a reality, and it continues to bog us down. The effort have always has been or should be to reduce that number as much as possible. I think one is that give a white glove experience to the candidate.
Yeah.
Because if you are able to give a very positive candidate experience during the hiring process, that would in itself create a great pull, because the candidate would understand that this is how we treat not only the candidate, but our employees. So I think that would continue to keep the attraction and the pull. That's number one. Number two, it's not only the job of the recruiter, but also the hiring teams to continue to keep the candidate engaged once the offer is rolled out, right? And there has to be a positive engagement, not just engagement in terms of chit-chatting once in a couple of weeks, but probably doing some kind of a soft onboarding, right? And creating that kind of an interest in the candidate that once you are in the system, you'll get to do this, do that, you're going to learn this, this is what you do. So you will create that kind of inquisitiveness in the candidate mind by having a very meaningful conversation every couple of weeks, and especially important for the hiring teams. And something which I think worked very well in the past as well, we've done it, is that what we call the buddy program, where we have the hiring teams appoint a buddy who is in constant connect with the prospective joinee along with the recruiter, of course. And then there is a reporting out happening so that we can keep a pulse on the sentiments and if there are any red flags coming up, so that you can work a little proactively to reduce a red flag from popping up on somebody's candidacy.
Yeah.
Other thing I think what's also important is that keep your talent pipelining proactive, right? Do not only rely on just one candidate. Probably always keep what we call a silver medalist. So I've always was a great proponent, and we practiced that keep the silver medalist candidate or the number two or number three candidate warm all the time, right?
Yeah.
So if there is an offer drop, you don't need to start from the scratch, but have this person rolled out the offer so that of course you will lose some time, but not as much as going back to the sourcing board.
Yeah, true.
Right? I think that's another one. And then the other thing, of course, which are the primary hygiene factors are like you are competitively being given a offer. You've done your branding engagement well. Those hygiene are there. Apart from this, I think few other things which you're going to take as steps will definitely help in reducing the offer drop rate. And we have experienced it. So I'm not saying it theoretically, in practicality, we have practiced it and we have seen positive basis points when it comes to offer drops.
Yeah, that's really great insights. And so I want to touch up a bit upon more on the candidate experience. And nowadays, I think providing top-notch candidate experience has become a must for companies. And feedback is one of the most crucial elements of a candidate journey, yet it is often overlooked. So I want to know from you, what are some key areas you would say companies should prioritize when it comes to candidate experience? And how can they effectively measure their efforts as well and constantly improve it?
I think this is one space where more is less. So I think that's what I would say. Approach your candidate experience as the way you approach your client experience. There's no difference. I think as long as you keep the same approach, I think then you're doing it right. I think that's important. Secondly, for candidates, so nothing is far more disappointing is ghosting them. And ghosting at times, it's not deliberate, but sometimes we overlook it. So I think what's very important is that keep the process very agile in terms of shorter turnaround time as much as possible. Keep the person engaged and informed about each and every baby step which is taking place in the hiring process, so that there is a high degree of transparency and openness. So that person is not assuming that what's really happening with my candidacy. I think that's important. Also, from the fact that I know these days it's becoming a little difficult, but we need to go back to it's not a totally, I would say, in-person hiring process, but there has to be a hybrid hiring process. Sometimes you're bringing the person in the office as well, at least once in the process, so that creates a big attraction and a pull for a person. And you as a recruiting team in the company also gets to showcase who you are. Yeah, I think wherever there's an opportunity, I think one should do that. Plus, I would say, for candidate, the feedback, you rightly said, it's very important. And something I experienced it is that the feedback mechanism in majority of the, in the recruiting organization is not the best, in a way, especially for not only for external candidates, but even for internal candidates, right? They staff for feedback because it's not about yes and no. They are also looking for something constructive input where they can probably can be a segue for them to do some kind of a developmental planning for their own candidacy for future opportunities, right? I know it is a little time consuming. It is at times a difficult conversation to happen, but I would really encourage everyone to find a sweet spot where you are providing some constructive feedback than a mere yes and no. I think that is greatly appreciated by the candidate, because the person would take this back as a learning and would appreciate, okay, that you took the time to know him or her well, and then probably it didn't work because for multiple reasons, and you were very open and transparent about sharing it, so that gives him or her the opportunity to work on it, so that can come better the next time.
Yeah.
So I think the feedback mechanism has to be 360 degree, and I think that's where your survey process works very well, because you may falter at times. You need to probably look with a very, I would say, deeper sight on your feedback surveys, and then take out gaps which have been spoken about and fix it, because candidate would really appreciate it. Nobody is expecting you to be 100 on 100. You may end up slipping out somewhere or the other, but as long as the person feels that your intention is right and you are intending to do good, even if you falter a bit, they'll give you the benefit of the doubt. I think that's important.
Yeah, rightly put. And in the current time, I think one of the major challenges faced by organizations is to retain their valuable and talented employees. So can you share any examples of successful strategies you have been able to implement to retain the tech talent?
I think whether it is tech talent or any kind of talent, right? I think what's important, which everyone seeks today and is a great glue to be with the organization, is the opportunity to do innovative work.
Yeah.
Opportunity to learn and develop into a better professional. Hmm. Right. Opportunity to move in his or her career and into a newer, better, bigger role. Right. So I would say learning and development, internal mobility opportunities, and the canvas to innovate and do something out of the box, right? Which is aligned to the person's purpose and value. I think what's very important is that everyone today, especially the new generation, is asking that question that, okay, and trying to measure or evaluate an organization based on how this company is fitting in my value system. Is it my value system aligning with the firm's value system or not? And they are making a decision whether to work for an organization based on this a lot, especially the newer generation. So I think as an organization, we need to continue to really listen to them, engage with them, and make changes so that their value proposition with the organization value proposition always remains aligned.
True. Yeah, very true. And I wanted to talk to you about the learning and development, like you mentioned. So I think with automation on an unstoppable rise, I think conventional skills are likely to be rendered obsolete sooner or later. So the need to, I think, encourage learning and promoting a culture that values skills and knowledge has never been more important. So how do you identify the learning needs or the skill gaps within an organization to shape the L&D strategy? And how do you ensure that it accommodates different learning styles, especially in a diverse and multi-generational workforce?
I think what's important to understand in today's context is that people are looking for on-the-go, bite-sized learning. I think so. I think that's a given. People are looking for a blended or a hybrid learning approach, and that's the most efficient way of operating it. Now, when it comes to identifying learning gaps, of course, we have different mechanisms where you can actually, through your smart workforce planning, figure out your current state with the future state of your work. And then whatever the delta is the delta of that skill which you need to fill. Now, for nothing is attractive to individuals if you give them democratize the learning path, and you do not make it siloed based on, okay, if you are a techie, then only you can pick up a course, let's say, in something to do with technology. But rather democratize it and make it open and let the people choose what they would want to really aspire to learn as their next skill, right? And I've seen multiple examples and situations where people coming from a non-tech background, they actually were so interested to pick up the technical training or technical career path that they moved into, let's say, from a data analytics. They learned, let's say, RPA skills, that is on automation. From there, they picked up certification, let's say, on, let's say, a UI path or a Blue Prism, and they moved into hardcore automation-related data analytics growth path. And then eventually learned machine learning data scientist, and they became and moved into a hardcore data scientist roles eventually,
nice.
Right?
Yeah.
So coming from a non-tech background, moving into data scientist, and I'm just giving one example. There are umpteen examples of moving from tech to non-tech. Of course, from non-tech to tech, it is not easy for sure. of course, but it is not that, it's not something impossible. Yeah, if you're expecting somebody who has no programming or coding competency, and you, the person aspires to be a coder, then it requires a lot of heavy lifting on the individual part to do that. So there has to be some guardrails and sense to dictate and advise people what would work and what would not. But I think democratizing the learning is the best way of upskilling someone and letting them to choose their growth story. I think that's the best way of doing it. Plus, as an organization, I've seen that they are very good in providing these learning opportunities, but they fall short of monetizing those learnings. What I mean by monetizing it is that I, let's say, learn a particular skill, but then there is no project or a work profile in which I can get into and implement or practice my learning. So then that learning is of becomes little useless in my mind. I feel that why they at the first place I actually did this learning when I'm not able to actually implement it. And then you see that those people seek opportunities outside the organization and they slip out. So I think what's important for organizations are not only to provide an ecosystem where you are able to encourage and make people, give them the canvas to learn, but also the opportunity to implement the learning through multiple ways. It may not be a full-time job. It could be a job rotation. It could be a project-based work. It could be like a gig opportunity. But give them something so that they can actually monetize the learning, which will make them feel more confident about what they've done, and then encourage them to actually take that learning path more seriously and continue to upskill in that path.
Yeah, I think you've rightly said. And Akshay, I think you actively support DEI and by bridging the gap through pipeline initiatives. And it's your firm belief that by promoting diverse talents, thoughts and cultures, backgrounds and capabilities, we can create an environment that fosters innovation and growth. It's absolutely true. So I want to understand a bit about how you approach diversity and inclusion in tech hiring. So what kind of strategies or initiatives like have you implemented to create a more diverse and inclusive hiring process?
No, absolutely. And this is something which is very close to my heart. And I've done a lot of body of work around this aspect. Now, if I talk about more on the India context, right? I think when we talk about India, diversity for us always become men versus women, right? Of course, the definition of diversity changes when you move across the geography. Now, in the recent past, a few programs which comes to the top of my mind, which really helped us to foster the diversity question is, one is the women's retention program in technology. So like the way our culture is and people, because of family obligations, they end up moving out of their profession journey for the family of the family obligations. And they, so return to work program was one where the idea was to bring the woman on break back into the workforce. And it requires a high degree of sensitivity, right?
A lot of
nurturing, a lot of coaching and mentoring to help them to gain the confidence on the, and also help them to upskill on the technical aspects so that they can start contributing positively. So I think that was one program which we launched a few years ago, and then we've been running it ever since and worked very well. And I feel take a lot of pride that I was involved in launching that program in India on that piece. Secondly, I think I did a lot of work on looking at the other diverse pools like LGBTQ plus, veteran talent, people with disability as well. And I think these talent pools are, of course, have a great visibility, and a lot happens in other geography. But I feel in India, we still have a lot to do. And to get into these talent pools, I felt the best way of doing it is that of forging some alliance with firms which are specialized and work more extensively in these fields, right? So I worked with a couple of vendor partners for LGBTQ plus PWD as well as veteran talent, not only to get insight on this kind of talent pool, but also they became instruments in helping us to and taught us the sensitivity around dealing with this talent pool. Also helped not only training our recruiters of how to manage this talent pool, but also our hiring managers how to really interact and engage with them during the hiring process and subsequently when we hire them as full-time employees, right? So I think that was a great learning in this regard. For example, if I talk about veteran talent, something I learned that veteran talent, we always understood veteran talent is going to be good and absorbed well in HR and admin roles. But I don't know how many of us know that veteran talent is a great fit in technical jobs, especially around cyber securities under technical project management. There's a good pool of talent to be hired for these kind of roles. I didn't know about it before I started engaging with this pool through our vendor partner. So that was a revelation for me, right? So these things, these kind of nuances, you get to know only when you start working more closely with them. And it was, I think, a great deal because I come from myself from a defense background, and I take a lot of pride in and running this initiative. Or people with disability, right? People with neurodiversity, for example, they are. I don't know how many of us know people with neurodiversity. They are well suited for hardcore data analytics jobs, right? Mm-hmm. They are, you know, they can be one good data scientist, machine learning specialist, or people working with pure numbers on the non-tech side, right? So they have that strong inclination and skills to do that kind of number crunching roles. I didn't know, but I got to know about it, and then we started absorbing them in those kind of a job roles. So I think more is less in this space, and it's a continuous effort which is required. Also, I feel that we need to not only the recruiting team need to work in silo, but involve the employee resource groups of the of your company, because your employee resource groups can really be your eye and ear and marshal the resources and create that kind of a ground swell up kind of a movement within the rank and file of the organization, so that you can get great support in running those initiatives, and you know, and they are great partner in this journey. So I think I've experienced it, and I will always encourage individuals, teams, and the recruiting organization to work with your ERG partners in the equal footing as you work and collaborate with your external vendor partners when it comes to diversity hiring or recruiting engagement.
Yeah, I think you've led some really amazing initiatives that, you've done really great work as well. So you've done a fantastic job. And so over the past few years, like, how have the perceptions of DEI changed within the tech industry?
I think, as I said, if I talk about from India context, right, the perception, I would not say perception, it is more about the awareness is getting better. I think awareness is getting better as it's a reflection of the openness and in a society itself, right? I think that is also helping and fueling this awareness. And then people are themselves are becoming more sensitive about the DEI aspect. And I would say the big momentous thing happened, which it made it a more like a day-to-day conversation, was the Black Lives Matters, which happened in the US at the height of COVID. I think it brought the subject in the mainstream conversation, and especially in including in India as well. I think I give a lot to that because that generated a lot of interesting conversations among people and helped the cause. So I would say that's the big change. And then with there's a lot of investment organizations are also doing in having this conversation as part of the mainstream, right? because it's not just about diversity of on the sexual orientation. It is also about diversity of thoughts. It's about diversity in the back of the social economic background, right? So diversities of different aspect, and I think people have started recognizing it, and they have started respecting it. I think that's the change, and there's a big momentous change happening in India as well, of course, where the conversations have now gone beyond of men versus women, but focusing on other kind of diversity, which I spoke about, especially on the LGBTQ plus, which is, if you see, is a great talent pool for us to harvest and cultivate. And then something which I think we need to do it big time. And it is also, if you see, especially Generation Z, they're a lot more attuned to the conversation and the practice around inclusivity. I think it matters to them a lot more. And I think, which is a good thing. So I would say it is becoming a more day-to-day conversation. It's a conversation happening now in everyone's drawing room, which is good, and it'll continue to foster from here.
Yep, absolutely true. And like we discussed a bit earlier, that employer brand is very important, and how crucial it is to build a strong employer brand. So I would like to know a bit about the unique or innovative employer brand initiatives you have led in the recent years, and as well as how you ensure consistency of your brand across multiple regions or countries to make sure it's dynamic and fresh, and especially like in an ever-evolving talent landscape.
No, of course, and something which has always been of great interest and passion to me. I think what's more important, and I've always ensured that to work closely with my talent branding, communication, marketing team, partners, because at the end of the day, they are the specialist, and you would need their advice and counsel to do the right thing. So I think, and that's what I've done, worked with them very, very closely day in, day out to ensure our messaging goes out to the right audience at the right time, the right place. So I think that's important. Secondly, I feel, which I've always encouraged, is using the power of your people or your employees to be there, because they are the biggest brand advocates.
Yeah.
So you need to really ensure there is institutionalized process where we not only encourage our employees to be the brand advocate, but also give them the tools necessary to do a good job, right? And that's what I spoke about those branding toolkits, giving it to each and every employee, ensuring that the branding guidelines, everyone is aware of it and they understand it well, so that they are doing the right thing. I think that's important. Also, having our recruiting team learn, work closely with the branding marketing team joining from the hips to work in tandem to really continue to message your talent branding messaging outside on a day-to-day basis. And everyone needs to think like a marketer and a sales guy. I feel that recruiting is one job that it is, as if somebody wants to segue one's career into sales and marketing, one can do it as a recruiter, because recruiter's job at the end of the day is of a sales and marketing person, right? If somebody is shying away from that, I've done that too, and I'll do it of encouraging people to not to shy away from this and develop this as a skill set. I think that's important, because at the end of the day, you need to think like a marketer, as a salesperson, to seek the right kind of support and counsel from your branding specialist to do this day in, day out. Nobody else can do it for you. So I think I've always practiced it, thought about it, and encouraged my teams to do the same. And I think it has always worked well for us. And the messaging in terms of Priyanka, in terms of what needs to message out to which geography, I think it'll continue to be on the guardrails, will be your global pitch. But there will be certain nuances which could be localized, right? Which would be based on certain sensitivities around cultural customs, regulatory environment, compliance, and so on and so forth. So you need to be aware of it. And then you have, see, and to be aware of it, you have help. You need to ensure that you ask for that help on your partners on the ground. But so keep a global, consistent communication with a, I would say, little bit of a slice of a localized approach.
True. Yeah, very true. And so how does the employer branding impact the quality and the quantity of the candidates you attract?
I would say, you know, a lot in today's time, especially in the market, which is so chaotic, where there's a supply constraint. You need to continue to differentiate yourself from the other, right? And in that effort, you need to have your branding game top notch. Otherwise, it is, if you're not in the, if you don't capture the mind space of the talent, then you have lost the battle, right? Mm. So I think it's not about going overboard, but with your, it's not about, you always need to spend like dollars to really be on the front page of a newspaper. I'm not doing that, but it's a continuous process where you are ensuring that you occupy the mind space. And there can be subtle ways of doing it, right? As I said, using your employees, using your recruiters, using your social media channels. Of course, the other people, we use different websites as well, be it Glassdoor, be it your career website. Continue to really keep the content rich, make it bespoke based on the kind of candidate or talent you are, or which generation you are focusing on, which region. I think customize it. I think that so the concept or the fundamentals of branding, which for years the advertising industries has mastered, I think one needs to really imbibe those strategy and use it in your talent marketing and messaging. But it has to be continuous. You cannot take a break. It could be that there is a spike of highs and lows. That's okay. But ensure that you are always capturing the mind space with relevant content, which is productive and which resonates with the end customer or the client. It has to be purpose driven. It cannot be fakey. It cannot be boisterous. It has to be very humane and very grounded. People appreciate that.
Yeah, right. And consistency is the key. And I want to touch a bit upon the employee experience as well, because it's more important than ever now, as a lot of companies are struggling with it and its prioritization as well. So what are a few key elements you would focus on which makes up a robust and holistic employee experience strategy that will address both the professional and the personal needs of its employees?
I would say go start with the basics. First, I think listening is very important.
Yeah.
I think, and there are different mechanisms through which you can listen to your employees. Of course, we have tools like those employee surveys, which are done yearly, or pulse surveys, which are done, probably every organization has their own cadence. But I think keeping your ears on the ground and getting to know about what people are thinking, I think it's a great way to know what's working and what's not working, and then take steps to solution it. I think that's important. And then see, employee experience is the sum total of what you go through as a headcount of the organization, right? From your day-to-day interaction with your colleagues, with your seniors, with your juniors, your way of work, your workspace, the trust question you have with your boss, the opportunity to be yourself at work, the positive work environment, the culture, or your simple hygiene factors as, of course, your pump and bend, your well-being programs, opportunity to grow, learn, develop yourself into a better professional and a human being. All that really counts, right? As long as, as an organization, we are able to provide all these inputs for person to be themselves and able to bring their themselves to work, right? Where you are respected, where you your opinion counts, and you feel that you are important. I think that would create a positive work environment, and it'll have a reflection on the your employee experience.
So,
again, there is no one size fits all. You need to be prescriptive. You need to be deliberate, and you need to be, I would say, consistent in doing it.
Yeah, that's very true. And so with the rise of remote work and distributed teams, how can like talent acquisition teams adapt to accommodate these changing work dynamics?
I think, see, it, we were like, in a way, without we understanding it or could figure out what's happening around us, COVID made it happen, right? It was at a touch of a button, we all moved remote, and then using our ingenuity and the human spirit, we worked our way up in terms of how to work in a remote environment, right? So I think this remote hybrid work environment continues to play out. We, as a recruiting organization, I think we have already used and continue to leverage the technology to do that. Of course, probably one simple tool which I think a lot of us are using is virtual interviews, which probably was not hurt so much. I think we used to do a lot more in technology recruiting than any other kind of recruiting of doing those phone conversations or phone interviews rather than in person. Earlier, all around used to be like in person, right? Unless the person is a option candidate, for example, right? So I think necessity is mother of innovation, as I say. Right? So I think it has already taught us, and these collaboration tools through tech, which came up, especially in the last couple of years, have been of great help in really working in this remote kind of environment, because you need tools for not only for communication, but for collaborating, touching base with the employees, with the prospective candidates. So I think it's important, and they've been great, and it continues to, I think, evolve. So I see it just getting better from here, from where we started off from the COVID times.
Yep, true. And so actually you've been in the leadership role for many years now. So could you like share with us a few lessons you have learned being a leader and any tips or advice you have for folks who want to take up leadership roles?
I think what's important is that listening is an important skill to be a leader. I think not you as an individual don't know everything, and you need to be very understandable about it. That, so you need to have the heart and the sensibility of listening to your people, and then using that collective knowledge before taking a decision. So I think listening is very important. Secondly, I think you need to lead from the lens of empathy. I think there is no replacement to that. And I think COVID has taught us a lot more. On the thirdly, I feel from a leadership style, which I believe, you know, when I practice it, is servant leadership, where you do everything to ensure to create an environment for your team, for your clients, for your people, where they can thrive and operate from a vantage point so that they can be successful. Because if you provide them the ecosystem to thrive and you trust them, they'll do good and make you a superstar. So give them the opportunity to be successful and you be successful yourself. So I think give them all the tools necessary to do a good job. I think that's the servant leadership. And lastly, I would say situation leadership. Sometimes you need to think on your feet and respond rather than respond and act the way you say, okay, this is how I always act, or this is how I always behave. Sometimes you need to be very situational. And for that, you don't need to be leader. No, out of a given situation, anybody can rise from the ashes to be a leader and show up the guiding path to n number of people who would want to follow you. I think these are the few things which I have learned, and I always try to practice it and try to disseminate it as my learning to people who like to listen to me.
Yeah, I think those are some really great lessons and tips you've shared. And yeah, I think we've discussed a bit earlier as well that it's very essential to maintain good relations with both internal and the external stakeholders. But I think more often than not, there's always a communication gap and a disconnect between the stakeholders. So what is your approach to building strong relationships with the hiring managers as well as stakeholders to ensure a smooth recruitment process and successful hires?
I think whether it is me doing those conversations or my recruiters on the front line, I think one thing which is very important is openness, transparency, and communication. I think and continue to invest in the relationship building. I think there is there's nothing else which can dictate you to or ensure you're able to run the show confidently and successfully. Be the messenger of the negative news yourself rather than let anybody else be the messenger. I think, and whenever you are the messenger or when you're sharing the information, as I said, contextualize it. People really appreciate if you contextualize it and give them the reason why this worked and why it didn't work, and they'll give you the benefit of doubt. And also, more importantly, look for opportunities to generate value right at the beginning, right at the initial period of developing the relationship, right?
Yeah.
Because you generate that value, you showcase the value that would create a lot of respect in the eyes of your stakeholder or your customer or your client. And they'll actually work hand in hand with you to mitigate a potential obstacle, which probably if you do not have their confidence, then you may end up doing the job yourself.
Yeah, true. And I think in today's rapidly evolving digital landscape, businesses are constantly seeking innovative solutions to gain a competitive edge. And talent acquisition is one such area that has seen a significant transformation, and recruitment and hiring have been evolved from traditional methods to more sophisticated ones due to the advent of generative AI. So it's helping reshaping the talent acquisition function and revolutionizing the way we identify, attract, and retain the top talent. So what are your thoughts on this?
I would say still we are watching the space, how it is going to evolve. Right. So the jury is yet to be out.
Yeah.
But if I see it, the initial spurts, I think it's going to make life a lot more easier for the recruiting organization, because a lot of your mundane tasks, you can take support of the generative AI solutions to do that for you. And that time saving which you are able to gain, you can invest in relationship building and talent advisory and doing the account management, which is of dire need in today's time than ever, than probably focusing a lot more on transactional activity. So I think generative AI will free you up to do a lot more value add and be a true talent partner to your business and to your candidate as well as to your hiring manager.
Right. And yeah, it's the industry is constantly evolving, and the advancements and the changing job market demands are shaping the future of recruitment. So what emerging trends and technologies do you anticipate will have the biggest impact on the way we hire and retain talent? And how can recruiters be prepared for those changes?
I think generative AI, we just spoke about it, right? I think the biggest change which is coming in is in generative AI. And you will see mushrooming of lot many technology related tools on generative AI, which would come for a great support and rescue for the recruiting organization. Especially I see in not only though we have products so far using machine learning technology and other AI technology on resume screening and scraping, but I would more focus on these tools in which will help in assessing the talent rather than sourcing, because there is still the jury is yet to be out on because of the biasness in the system and with so much of, I would say, data loss coming into play. I think we need to still watch the space how these AI technology continue to evolve because of the landscape around diversity and biasness, right? But when it comes to evaluation, I think it's going to be of great help. There are already quite many of such tools which is helping you to measure different kind of skills within the candidate profile and connect with the kind of need of skills an organization have and do the kind of right matching to a great extent. And I can see continue to thrive. Secondly, there is a lot of work happening within the internal mobility, what we call the talent marketplace stuff.
Yeah.
So there is a lot of tools are being used and are continuing to develop to really to figure out how to do the internal mobility lot more successfully, where we are able to not only match the right talent with the right role, but also help in identifying the talent gaps and then advising our employees on certain learning journeys or learning paths to upskill themselves so that they can be rightly placed with the talent gap on those career journeys for a better role, which could be advanced to the job that they're in today, or they may move into adjacent roles. So I think that's another one. I feel thirdly, there's so much of work going on and continue to get advanced on the within the field of people analytics,
right? Yeah.
It has come a long way, and these generative AI models will continue to flip our people analytics capabilities, and in turn, these people analytics capabilities would really help us to follow a more deeper data-driven approach when it comes to recruiting. Especially as I was talking about earlier in the conversation about predictive analytics, right?
Yeah.
Where you are little bit more forecastive in your approach, where you are probably will help the recruiting organization not to be reactive, but a lot more proactive. And that's where people analytics is coming to our aid as a recruiting firm. And I'm very excited about it.
True. And I think recruiters will need to possess a wide range of skills and qualities to succeed in this dynamic and rapidly changing world of recruitment. So what skills and qualities do you think will be most important for the recruiters in the future?
I think I say future is now. So those skills are required now also, not just in the future. And those are more to do with soft skills than the hard skills. So skills like being adaptable, agile. You need to be very tech savvy to understand new technologies like AI, automation. You need to be very high in emotion intelligence to understand candidates' needs and motivation. Then for problem solving, critical thinking, understanding of cultural competencies, and a growth and learning mindset. I think that's important. And last but not the least, data literacy.
Yeah.
Because unless you are, and I'm not saying that you need to be data geeks, you need to be comfortable with data. So that you can contextualize it, you can do a good storyboarding so that you can have a meaningful conversation with your stakeholders and do a solution ideation with them together. So I think that's where the data literacy would be very well needed.
Great. And so before we wrap up our conversation, I wanted to ask you, Akshay, so your experience in the industry goes back to 2 decades. So can you tell us a bit about how the industry has changed over time from back then when you started out to Fast Track to today?
I've seen the world of recruiting where there were no ATSs.
Yeah.
to now where there are ATSs, which are not only intuitive, they are more predictive, and they continue to evolve. So I think it's a great time to be in, and I'm very excited about the future in terms of what more technology is going to bring in for making the life of a recruiting team a lot more easier and effective. But I think all the more what's important that will continue to be the primary skill is that the recruiter. You need to be still very human in your approach. You need to carry the thought of what can I do to ensure I am creating a positive impact in the life of that candidate. Right? You need to think like a candidate yourself. If I'm on in his or her shoe, what am I going through? What are those challenges, the thoughts, the mind games which minds are playing, and think from that candidate perspective and try to solution it. Try to make the journey a lot more comfortable and easier. Those tenants were there back in the day, and they continue to be there today and going in the future. That is, you need to keep the approach as people first. There's no replacement for that. And I think that's going to be, and employee value proposition, talent branding and marketing, a growth mindset, all would be needed to grow and thrive in the future as a recruiter or as a recruiting team. And be proactive and prescriptive in your approach, I think, and less of reactive, less of transactional approach. I think that's the need of the hour, and this continue to be required more and more as we move into the future as a learning team, because our businesses at stakeholders are not looking to us as a team who are just running a requisition and running from point A to point B. They're looking at us as a true solution partners who can we ideate on talent strategy and then help them to bring the right talent on the door and support them in their quest to find the best candidates around before time, or I would say being a little bit more forecastive than reactive. I think rather than getting stuck in jargons, they are looking at us working in a solution oriented fashion where we are on the same side of the table, not on the opposite side of the table.
Yep, I think rightly said. And that brings us to the end of our conversation. We've had a very in-depth conversation, which I really loved. And I enjoyed speaking with you, Akshay. And I love the insights and the tips you've shared with us today. So thanks again for joining Tech Recruiting Unfiltered podcast.
Well, thanks, Priyanka, too. Thanks for having me. Really appreciate that.
Thanks for listening to Tech Recruiting Unfiltered podcast. We hope you enjoyed as well as learned from it. To gain more such insights, join us for our next episode. You can follow us on LinkedIn at Technical Hiring Showcase page and our website technical-hiring.com to receive all the updates. That's all for this episode, folks. See you next time.